Are you ready for the quantum age?
Humanity's next step in evolution?
Dream Vision 7 Radio Network invites you to the extraordinary platform of evolutionary voices for the quantum age.
Let's explore. Learn more about this upcoming age where we bridge science with spirituality.
Where potentiality meets reality.
Where we take compassion into action.
Our trailblazers and visionaries will ask the whys, the what ifs, while igniting continuous possibility.
Come along with us into an age beyond what we know today, where we can grow together in unity consciousness.
Experience evolutionary voices for the quantum age, Monday through Friday at 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. Eastern on DreamVision7Radio.com.
Welcome to the Lifeboat Hour with your host, Carolyn Baker.
Everybody knows that the dice are loaded. Everybody rolls with their fingers crossed. Everybody knows the war is over. Everybody knows the good guy's lost.
Welcome to the new Lifeboat Hour, where each week we have a very special guest who speaks to us on some issue that's relevant to the collapse of industrial civilization, climate change, or other issues with which we are concerned on this planet. And a few weeks ago, my friend Dmitry Orlov sent me the PDF of Women on the Verge of Societal Breakdown, Preserving Hard-Won Freedoms During the Age of Uncertainty by Piero San Giorgio. Now, of this book, Dmitry wrote on his blog that Piero's book, quote, illustrates the crucial role which women need to play as traditional keepers of home and hearth to keep the family together and doing well during treacherous, turbulent times. But he also recognizes the great difficulties women will face as the societies they depend on decay and fall apart, and the precariousness of the major gains women have made over the past century, which he rightly calls the century of women. While recent social progress has made women independent and men somewhat superfluous, these trends tend to quickly reverse as society begins to regress. Piero calls on men to start acting like men once again, and to once again become strong, reliable defenders of women and of their families, unquote. Now, I know that most of you are familiar with Dmitry and his work. His blog is cluborlov.blogspot.com, and he's the author of Reinventing Collapse, as well as The Five Stages of Collapse, and a number of other books. Dmitry is, in my opinion, a brilliant social critic who brings to his work a perspective that Americans simply do not have by virtue of his Russian roots and his up-close and personal experience with the collapse of the Soviet Union. In addition to his blog and his numerous books, Dmitry now operates Club Orlov Press, and these days when the publishing industry is collapsing as blatantly as all of the other aspects of the culture, it's reassuring to know that there's a place where people who are writing about societal trends and our current predicament might have a publishing option that they couldn't find elsewhere. And in today's podcast, we're focusing on Piero's book, Women on the Verge of Societal Breakdown, which was published by Club Orlov Press. So I want to let our listeners know that Piero San Giorgio, and that's spelled P-I-E-R-O, San, S-A-N, Giorgio, G-I-O-R-G-I-O, has a Facebook page, and he also has several YouTube videos, although not all in English. In addition, Piero is the author of Surviving Economic Collapse, which is in English. So I don't want to belabor a long introduction of Dmitry, who needs no introduction to most of you. Welcome, Dmitry, to the new Lifeboat Hour.
Thank you, Carolyn. Great to be on your show again.
Well, as always, it's great to have you. And in just a few words, Dmitry, would you summarize Piero's book for us? We're going to go into great detail, but just kind of in a nutshell, what do you make of his book?
Well, Piero wrote a previous book, a weighty tome, which is an international bestseller on surviving collapse. And it's sold extremely well in Europe and in the United States. It's available in English. This book is basically a similar message that explains the precariousness of our situation and the inevitability of the unwinding of all the super complex, highly developed, fine-tuned economic and social systems that we all depend on for our survival. But it specifically speaks to women in terms of how this will influence them, how it will endanger them specifically, what they can do about it. And half the book is actually testimonies from women who have read his previous book and for whom that was a life-changing experience. They completely reformed their outlook on life. They started concentrating on a different agenda. Mm-hmm. And it's their testimonies. It's them basically relating on, sometimes on very basic level, what it is that they're facing and how they're coping.
Yeah, and that's one of the things I really liked about it is that, excuse me, most of the book is by women. So one of the impressive features is that Piero has given us a number of chapters in the book written by women, and one of those is by Claire Sevarac, I think I'm pronouncing that correctly, who states in the introduction that women have been fooled into accepting the traditionally male role of breadwinner while trying to still carry on with being women and raising children. And in the process, they've lost the support of men who are essential for bringing up psychologically healthy children, boys especially. I'd like you to comment on this and flesh out what you think Claire is saying.
Well, yes, yeah, so you can make the case rather forcefully that basically what women in the modern world have been dealt is a swindle. That is, the fundamental value that they have added to life since time immemorial, as mothers, as grandmothers, as keepers of the hearth, as those who brought up the children, as those who held the family together, the extended family, not just the nuclear family. You know, this role as the glue of society on the micro scale. This role has been just completely devalued. It is no longer recognized at all. Instead of honoring that work, it has been largely automated using various gadgets and gizmos, and nobody's complaining about not having to hand wash dishes or clothes. But on the other hand, that has devalued a great deal of other work, house work. A lot of productivity previously was in the home and done by women. Instead of this, women have been forced out into the world, forced to compete with men, squeeze men out of jobs, render men relatively redundant in society. The final chapter of that is women getting squeezed out of the workforce as well as their jobs are automated or offshored, because nobody is indispensable in this economic setup where you don't value people. Mm-hmm. So basically, women, by joining the workforce, have devalued themselves, and there's the path back is very painful and very difficult, because the culture where women's work and women's position within the home was a position of honor no longer exists. That culture has decayed to nothing.
Well, certainly middle-class women who work outside the home don't do much in the way of homemaking. That's usually delegated to hired help, you know, maids or cleaning women or nannies, you know. And so that's quite a shift as well, I think. Wouldn't you say?
Well, yes. A feminist is basically a rich woman who uses a lot of hired help, and basically it's a woman who exploits other women while talking up women's rights. That is a very standard setup.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So in the book, Piero talks about his grandmother, Margarita. And Margarita, he says, charts the course of women's progress over the past century, which he's calling this past century the century of women. And as you say, this puts women's liberation into perspective. A few million years of our existence as intelligent hominins, a few thousand years of civilized existence, and a few decades of this, all driven by fossil fuels. I'd like you to talk about that, if you would, and why it's important.
Well, people no longer want to really focus on the concept of what is normal, because that impinges on their freedom to decide how exactly they want to live, and it forces them to pass judgment on themselves, whether they're fit or not in a biological sense. But since time immemorial, there's been a certain pattern of a family life centered around children, multi-generational, based on an extended family. Unions, marriages, were basically entered into for the sake of the extended family, not for the sake of the individuals involved. Marriage, to a large extent, was never some sort of pursuit of, you know, romantic, or infatuation or sexual fulfillment or anything like that. It was basically a deal where one surrendered.
Right.
And the marriage as an act of surrender seems like such an incredible anachronism now, where it's all about romantic life and sort of giving a little bit of dignity to the sex act. But since time immemorial, it was actually entered into for the sake of the grandparents and the children and the tribe. So that is normal. And what we've had for the past 100 years is abnormal in this sense. And it is only workable within this very highly organized, automated society powered by fossil fuels, where basically we have all these fossil fuel slaves running around doing most of our work for us that allow us to live better than kings used to. But once that joyride is over, it will turn out that we have become or have made ourselves into absolute misfits.
What do you mean by absolute misfits?
Unable to survive, unable to bring up children, unable to feed or clothe ourselves, unable to construct our own shelter. Basically, once the shelves in the stores are bare and the cash machines are out of cash and the lights are out, we're just waiting to die or for somebody to come and rescue us. We're that helpless.
Absolutely. And that is going to be a nightmare for societal relations, and I think a nightmare for women in terms of violence, wouldn't you say?
Well, right now...
Or for everyone in terms of violence, but I think especially women.
Well, it depends. It depends on what part of the world you are. For instance, if you're in Germany or in Sweden, those are now countries where women should not go around in public unattended, unaccompanied. They, at this point, Germany and Sweden are countries where women need to be chaperoned. They need bodyguards. And there's no formal service for doing that. There's no recognition that this is necessary. And as a result of that, Sweden is now the rape capital of Europe. Mm-hmm. Women getting raped by migrants left and right. And what do the police do? Well, first of all, they go easy on the migrants because they don't want to look racist. Mm-hmm. And secondly, they want to hush up these crimes because, the government officials don't want to hear that there is this problem with the migrants, that basically they form roving gangs that rape women. They don't want to see that. So everybody is in complete denial that this is happening in Sweden and Norway and Germany and perhaps other countries in Europe as well. But if when these migrants cross the border into Russia, as they sometimes do, they get thrashed by men. So Russian culture is very different. So if a migrant, tries to molest a Russian woman, he gets beat up by, locals, and then the police get called and the police beat him up some more and toss him in jail. And so, Russia has absolutely no tolerance for foreigners abusing their women. Mm-hmm. Whereas the Europeans have lost it. Mm-hmm. The man you know, in Cologne on New Year's Eve, just a while ago, a lot of women got attacked and molested by North Africans, and the men stood idly by and did nothing to defend them. Mm-hmm. So this is already happening. You know, women no longer have the prerogatives of living in a secure world in places that we have assumed to be secure and safe and stable.
In the United States, I can certainly see massive rape and violations of women by other people, other United States citizens, not necessarily migrants. I can certainly see that happening.
Well, it does happen. It happens more often, I would say, in societies that are greatly disrupted. This is a violent society in the United States. There's always some amount of rape going on. But what is happening in various places in the world is that, you know, huge, rootless populations consisting of men from very repressive, sexually repressive cultures, mm-hmm. who are incredibly sexually frustrated, being released into the wild and then being coddled by the local authorities.
Mm-hmm. You say that we've moved from the Platonic conception of women as domestic chattel to the modern version of women as modern industrial chattel, but this is by no means a form of liberation, you say. And Piero talks about women's autonomy alongside their partners as distinct from either of these forms of oppression. Could you say more about that?
Well, yes, a very unfortunate thing happened in the late Roman era and the early Middle Ages, where the Christian Church, which until then was largely dominated by women. I mean, the people who spread Christianity really were the wives of Roman citizens. They were the ones who championed the rights of the slaves and the poor, etc. Mm-hmm. But then once Christianity became the official religion, it was co-opted by men. The women got squeezed out of Christianity. They mm-hmm. could no longer serve. And their rights were suppressed. And the way this was done was by introducing this previous ideology, the Platonic ideology, which was very male-centric, as a justification for doing that. And that carried on pretty much until late 19th, early 20th century, with some countries in the vanguard and some countries trailing far behind. To give you an example, you know, my own grandmother was a microbiologist in the Soviet Union who did her research on diagnosing cancer cells biopsies using ultraviolet light. She did that research in the 50s. You know, and compare that to the U.S., which still hasn't managed to pass the Equal Rights Amendment, was very slow in giving women the same, basically the same rights as men. So different countries went on different paths, but they all went in the same direction, where women have now, throughout the world, even in places like Saudi Arabia, have many more rights than they used to.
Well, Piero points to women as keepers of the hearth, caretakers and nurturers who have a huge role to play in securing their family's autonomy. And from his perspective, the thousands of details that women routinely handle to make family life possible and happy can be transformed positively by appreciating the need to become autonomous in basic needs such as shelter, food, water, and security. Now, many women might disagree with this, but I'd like to hear your perspective.
Well, yes, you talk about autonomy and basically, preparing for bad times with men. And they will talk about technology. They'll talk about guns. They'll talk about locale, how to train with other men, all of this kind of tribal stuff that men are pretty good at. But what they're not really good at is the 1,001 details of daily life, which are the purview of women. So it is really striking reading the testimonials in Piero's book, all these women who are preparing They talk about all of these details, all of these things from, you know, keeping chickens to macrame and everything in between. All of these things that they see as part of that, just every detail of daily life. It's a completely different attitude and much more realistic. So, you know, it's all of those non-glamorous duties, like what to do when a kid has an asthma attack, you know, they generally fall on women. Women know how to do all this stuff. Women know how to prepare for it. And so a book that talks to them directly teaches them what to watch out for and how to deal with what is pretty much inevitable at this point, what's baked in. You know, I think that is, you know, it's a huge step in the right direction.
Yeah, it definitely is. I thoroughly enjoyed reading some of the stories of these women. Now, you say that the path of women's liberation has run parallel with the path of social destruction. First, extended families were disrupted in favor of nuclear families, and then nuclear families were made superfluous, replaced by single mothers. And finally, motherhood is being done away with by making women work while putting their children in subsidized childcare from an early age, meaning that their children are no longer theirs to bring up as they see fit. Women have gained power relative to men, but both women and men have lost power because while a tribe or an extended family can be powerful, a lone individual is weak, subject to administrative whim. So in total societal collapse, where do you think this is going to leave us? And where do you think all of this might take us if we should be fortunate enough to survive as a species for another 100 years?
Well, the standard thing that will happen to a lot of people is that they will be stranded among strangers, expecting to be rescued. And in many cases, that rescue will never come. That's the worst possible outcome. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Basically, life as a refugee in your own country. Mm-hmm. People can do a lot better than that, and some people will do a lot better than that in the various places, enclaves, where, you know, there's more of a connection between people, where they haven't been as atomized. Strangely enough, poor people will definitely do better than rich people. Mm-hmm. Because the rich people, they expect to get whatever they want by paying for it. And once their money is no good, what do they do then? They have no coping mechanisms beyond opening their pocketbook. Whereas poor people rely on each other. And the only capital they really have is social capital. So they treasure it. And they know how to make use of it, but also a lot of marginal groups, immigrant communities, recent immigrants who haven't really lost touch with each other. They tend to sort of exist as a group and figure things out together, etc. Well, they'll figure this out together too, to some limited extent. And then, of course, there are people who are becoming tribal. On various levels, sort of micro-tribal or even bigger tribes. Sometimes the tribes are sort of very ad hoc, and sometimes they're more or less inevitable, like people who have served together, they tend to retire together. And because they've served together, there's a great deal of loyalty built into their relationships. They will definitely do the best. You know, it's pretty much all over the place, but it's not like I wouldn't paint it all with one, you know, black brush.
Sure. Yeah, well, this comes back to what we've talked about, those of us talking about collapse for many, many years, is, you know, if you're networked, if you're dialed in with somebody, if you have some sense of community, you're going to do better. And the people who would do the worst are certainly those who are, as you say, the most atomized.
Well, yes, and location also matters. So, you know, for instance, where I am now, okay, well, if there's no food in the stores, there's still shrimp in the creek. Mm-hmm. You know, there's still some fish out in the sound. You can get a little boat and go catch dinner. And there's lots of edible stuff just growing all over the place that all of the local people know. Don't necessarily love, but no. I mean, if you're really desperate, you can eat kudzu and stay alive that way. So, there are fallbacks. But if you're in the middle of Manhattan and the lights go out, then you're pretty much just waiting to die.
Absolutely. Well, from your perspective, the rhetoric of social progress, I'm sorry, from your perspective, the rhetoric of social progress, you say, is largely empty. For every woman who manages to have it all, there are dozens who devote themselves to their careers only to end up childless and alone, and dozens more who spend years earning degrees in hopes of a career that they then give up on in favor of having a reasonable family life. And these are the good outcomes, you say, which are becoming a rarity. Now, before I ask for a response here, I need to say that I'm childless and alone, and I couldn't be more content. But I'm pretty sure your assertion is much broader than this, and I'd like you to expound on it.
Well, yes. I don't think that it's absolutely impossible to sort of have most of it, not necessarily have it all. For instance, in the better-run European countries, women, you know, work maybe 20, 25 hours a week, if that. I mean, nominally, it's like a 32-hour work week or something like that in some countries. But the way they work is, you know, they feed the kids breakfast, then they go to the office, and then they have coffee with their colleagues in the cafeteria. Then they do a bit of work, and then they go home for dinner, you know, and then they go back to the office, do another little stint of work, and then drink more coffee with their colleagues. And that's called a workday. Okay, so that doesn't really interfere with family life too much. Whereas the typical American office worker, you know, eats lunch at the desk, if that, works upwards of 40 hours a week, sometimes as much as 60, is unable to ignore emails and phone calls, even out when they're not at work, go to work even if they're sick because of the various, you know, sick day related policies, right, et cetera. They're just too harried with their life to actually be useful as mothers, unfortunately. I see these women, you know, looking very professional and proper, behaving hideously towards their children, just ignoring them completely, or, mm-hmm, you know, being nothing more than disciplinarians. It's like nothing, no connection. Just, you do this, you do that. You're behaving badly. That's all I hear from them. Now, that's not motherhood. So It's in this setup, it's very, very hard. I'm not blaming them for it. I'm just pointing out that what they're attempting is impossible.
Because so much of the constraints of this culture, and it's, as you say, it's really important to notice the differences in the workplace between here and, for example, Sweden or Germany, wouldn't you say?
Well, yes, just about anywhere in the world, because here the idea is to work someone as hard as possible and then discard them. You know, it doesn't really add up to a lot. So if you look at the productivity numbers in the United States, they're pretty bad compared to most of the rest of the world, because you can't treat people like that and then expect them to actually do a good job. So it's just a dysfunctional work culture, absolutely dysfunctional.
We live in a culture that is obsessed with happiness. Don't worry, be happy, we sing, and yet our happiness is circumstantial and can easily be undermined when things aren't going our way. All of the great spiritual traditions have taught us that happiness is not the same as joy, and they have shown us how to access the deep core of joy that resides within our being. My dear friend Andrew Harvey and I have recently released a beautiful book entitled Return to Joy, in which we not only clarify the difference between joy and happiness, but provide tools for accessing joy no matter what is occurring in our lives. Return to Joy is a compelling and potent invitation to the reader to consider that joy is the ultimate nature of reality, and that its absence lies at the root of our current unprecedented global crisis. In this book, Andrew and I mine the mystical wisdom of the ages that places joy at the core of our existence and purpose as a species, moving forward to consider in depth the myriad enemies of joy in our time. As we tend the fires of joy, we celebrate its seven flames and nurture its ubiquitous presence, whether in the background or the foreground of our lives. Return to Joy is available on Amazon, the Barnes & Noble website, and through your local bookseller.
Are you ready for the quantum age?
Humanity's next step in evolution?
Dream Vision 7 Radio Network invites you to the extraordinary platform of evolutionary voices for the quantum age.
Let's explore. Learn more about this upcoming age where we bridge science with spirituality.
Where potentiality meets reality.
Where we take compassion into action.
Our trailblazers and visionaries will ask the whys, the what ifs, while igniting continuous possibility.
Come along with us into an age beyond what we know today, where we can grow together in unity consciousness.
Experience evolutionary voices for the quantum age, Monday through Friday at 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. Eastern on DreamVision7Radio.com.
Continuing my conversation with Dmitry Orlov today, I want to remind folks that you can read all of his work at cluborlov.blogspot.com, and you can access Piero San Giorgio's book, Women on the Verge of Societal Breakdown, both at Dmitry's blog site or on Amazon or through your local bookseller. So, Dmitry, you say that it would be wrong to see future evolution of women's and men's roles as going back to the past. The future will not resemble the past, nor will our future roles resemble our past roles. The rhetoric of going backward is very harmful. You say, essentially a thought stopper designed to prevent people from rethinking their lives and making necessary changes. Labels such as progressive and regressive and identity politics in general, you say, are all parts of an ideology of bureaucratic enslavement. My question is, in a total collapse scenario, do any of these issues really matter? Talk to us about that, if you would.
Well, I think they do. The way they show up first is that, well, especially in the United States, but In the West in general and in some other countries as well, they're educated, prosperous elites who believe that they're right. And they believe that people who don't agree with them are wrong and that they're despicable and that they're misogynist and sexist and racist and whatever other label you might apply to them. They're just generally backward. And although they would never say anything bad about, say, blacks or Latinos, if these people in question are white, and especially if they're male, then it's pretty much open season on them all the time. And the amount of bigotry in the United States that is lavished upon white males that don't necessarily have the right pedigree or the right education or whatever is just horrendous. The progressive label kind of cuts both ways at this point, and by self-labeling oneself as progressive, one generates a fantastic amount of hostility in the surrounding population, and that hostility will only increase over time. And you know, this great divide between, you know, people who live in places like Bethesda, Washington, and only talk to their nice liberal friends. And the rest of the country, you know, that this divide can spill into actual hostility, civil war, if you will. And this is something that needs to be dealt with. This is not something that can continue. And people don't really, they shouldn't think about it in terms of politics. They shouldn't talk about it in terms of social policy. Those are basically useless. They should talk about it in terms of, and think about it in terms of their personal safety. Their bubble is going to be burst. Mm-hmm. They're going to be in a hostile world where their liberal, progressive shibboleths are going to get them into endless trouble.
So I think it's difficult to get people to think in terms of safety when they don't see any threat, right?
Well, yes, absolutely. Yeah. And that's kind of the nice thing about clueless people is that they generally just kind of get themselves out of the way. You know, they flush themselves out of the gene pool. Nobody has to do anything about them. It's not like it's anybody's job to rescue them. You know, it's, I mean, here I am saying it, but they don't have to listen to me. That's fine. And so, yeah, I don't know what to add to that. But basically, for anybody who really cares, progressive is a label, and the idea of progress is a faulty one,
mm-hmm.
because whatever progress we've had has created horrific side effects that are going to be, in the end, much worse than any benefit that this progress has provided us with. You know, as a result of all this progress, we're going to be left on a terribly overpopulated, terribly depleted, terribly polluted, and overheated planet where we will barely survive. Okay, that's progress.
Right.
Now, that's bad. A lot of people will say, oh, yes, environmental destruction and you know, runaway climate change, those are bad things. But then social progress is just fine. It's just dandy. Mm-hmm. And they'll talk about economic collapse and how horrible it is and blah, 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 and then talk about how their kids wouldn't ever put up with any kind of non-progressive setup that will allow them to survive in that sort of a situation by becoming tribal and by going back to doing everything within the home.
Well, my final question for you today is this. You talk about Piero's method, which he elaborates on in the book, and you say that, as evidenced by all the testimonies provided by women making up much of the book, as we've talked about, Piero's method is effective. Piero argues that it's helped thousands of women in many parts of the world realize what it is that they have to do and start doing it. They communicate via internet forums, share advice, and help each other. Can you say more about his method and what kind of networks of support are the women in the book building?
Well, a lot of the writing that's been done in this area of making people aware of what's coming, of how collapse will work itself out, and how it will affect people, is basically a very much an intellectual quest. It's written by middle-class educated white men for other middle-class educated white men.
Right.
Which makes it very impenetrable and insular and boring to lots of other people. And this is a major failing, major shortcoming. Piero breaks that down. His writing is much simpler and very much to the point, where whatever he says, you can imagine how that thing will affect your life. And he specifically talks to women. Most of his examples are from women. Most of his quotes are from women. Most of his little inspirational quotes are also from various women, well-known ones. And so he breaks down that barrier. His writing is so much more approachable than mine or Jim Kunstler's or Greer's or just about anybody else's. And that's why this book, I think, has, you know, it sold out in France. It sold out in Russia. It's probably going to sell out in Italy. And I hope it does well in the U.S. too, because, you know, it's basically he just demolished this barrier single-handedly. I'm very happy that, you know, he picked me to translate his book from French. I was happy to do the job because I think it's significant.
And what I would love to see is one of the women or more of the women in the book writing their own books on this topic. That would be awesome.
Well, yes, the testimonials are all works in progress, because these women's preparations are all works in progress. But I think that they will issue updates over time, and I think some of their stories, especially, you know, the women who have taken on various really arduous tasks, like making a go of it, you know, in rural Tunisia, things like that, will probably make very compelling stories.
Dmitry Orlov, thank you so much for being with us today on the new Lifeboat Hour, and thank you so much for publishing Piero's book and supporting his work. We may not all agree with everything he says, or you write, or vice versa, but these are really, really important ideas on the topic of collapse and societal trends that we should all be paying attention to. So thank you so much, Dmitry.
Thank you, Carolyn.
And until next time, folks, join us again next week on the new Lifeboat Hour. Meanwhile, be well, be safe, and be awake.
Thank you for joining us today. You can hear all podcasts and learn about Carolyn Baker's other works at www.carolynbaker.net. Her daily news digest is available by subscription and is delivered to your inbox 7 days per week with real news on economics, environment, geopolitics, civil liberties, and cultural issues, plus links to articles on inspiration and resilience. Come sail with us again next week on the Lifeboat Hour.